It's time for JT the Brick.
Reset the show. This is the home of the Raider Nation, where Raider fans have a voice on this. I love putting fans on the radio. I love hearing emotion. I love hearing passion. I love hearing people, if they're critical or they're happy, whatever there is, I like to hear people to know I'm on the radio, not guests if they're listening and wondering if they're out there. And hopefully I bring that to the radio show. Fandom, fandemonium, getting people excited about sports.
JT the Brick.
I care about going to games and winning games. That is it. I like to pause, have a sip of water, and talk to a Raider fan, either in a chat or over the phones, who has something smarter to say than I do, which many do. More knowledgeable fans than me, I admit that. More passionate fans than me? Yeah, there's a number of them. But I'm the gateway to getting everybody in here to let it rip. There's never an off season in the Raider Nation. Got it? That's the show.
And now,
Fandemonium.
Here's JT the Brick.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the show. I'm watching the Euros. Come on, England. Copa. Soccer is big here, but we're talking Raiders today, and I'm always thrilled to talk to Sam Munson, kind enough to join us from PFF, one of their great insiders. I listen to the podcast, I watch their content, and they're always ranking or rating something. Sam, good to talk to you again. Let me jump in and start. We're feeling neglected out here in Raider Nation. We feel like everyone's against us here out in Raider land because everyone's giving love to the Chargers when it comes to gaming odds and winning the AFC if it's not the Chiefs. What's the problem nationally with the Raiders? What do people like you and your peers think about the team, the offseason, where they stand now in June?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is the quarterback situation. It's a lot easier to talk yourself into a high upside, optimistic outlook for a team like the Chargers because they have Justin Herbert, and we know that he's capable of special play, and even if he hasn't necessarily hit it consistently throughout his NFL career, Herbert plus Jim Harbaugh, it's a storyline that writes itself, whereas the Raiders, you know, for the second year in a row, it sort of feels like they were the team without a quarterback when the music stopped. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew, it's certainly an intriguing duo. Those guys are fascinating quarterbacks, each in their own right, but neither one of them feels like an obvious, mm-hmm. long-term, definite answer for the Raiders. But I think this team, outside of the quarterback, is actually moving in the right direction on both sides of the ball.
So you're okay with the roster in general. It's the quarterback, and that's really what I'm seeing here as we look at this, is that everybody is not really diving into anything deeper with the quarterbacks because they think, is it fair to say that the ceiling is low or it's limited and not one of the two? Can Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew in this system with Brock Bowers, Michael Mayer, Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, can one of them really excel and surprise people, or is it just limited?
It may be limited. Look, Gardner Minshew is not a bad quarterback. Right. He's in a couple of different spots now. He's surprised people and I think played at a level higher than people expected him to or that people thought he was capable of. So it's entirely possible that Minshew within this offense or within this team is capable of making them a pretty good side and maybe a playoff team. But it's definitely, you know, when you have Gardner as your quarterback, it does feel like there's a pretty hard ceiling placed on top of that. And then Aiden O'Connell, you know, he was a fascinating quarterback. Like him as a prospect, his highlight reel coming out of Purdue was as good as any quarterback in that draft class. It's just that the lowlight reel was equally as impressive in the opposite direction. And his rookie season kind of looked a bit like that. We had two or three games in there where he looked really, really good. But there were also two or three games in there that were pretty disastrous. Mm-hmm. And it's a question of what is he going to be long-term, or is he going to settle into this kind of Ryan Fitzpatrick role where he's a borderline starting caliber quarterback, but a guy that can catch fire for a while. And when you get the high end of his variance, you get really productive play, but eventually the wheels fall off and, you know, he gets benched or he gets moved on and you know, it's sort of the story of Ryan Fitzpatrick's career.
Sam Munson is our guest. So with 12 personnel, with two tight ends who have a chance to be really good at Michael Mayer and especially Brock Bowers, and Luke Getsy being the offensive coordinator, which quarterback do you think could navigate that two tight end set better, Minshew or Aiden O'Connell?
I mean, I think Minshew is almost certainly a better quarterback than O'Connell right now. Mm-hmm. But O'Connell's the young guy. He's the guy that's easier to sell yourself on upside. And you know, we don't quite know exactly what he is yet. And maybe he can be better than I've just described. Maybe he can sort of permanently end up on the right side of that range of outcomes. And he's, in that case, you know, he becomes the better option. So I think it's tough. I say you let them battle it out. And if you can convince yourself that Aiden O'Connell has at least got parity in that quarterback competition, you give him the job, you give him the opportunity to fail, and you know that if you need to, you can turn to Minshew.
One of the big things I wanted to ask about the Chargers, how could they be better without Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams? I get that Harbaugh's there, and he's going to sprinkle dust on the organization, and he's a good coach, and they're going to be tougher and more physical. But from a personnel perspective, other than the quarterback, I don't see them having an elite roster, and they won five games last year. What's the upside for the Chargers?
Yeah, the receiver room definitely looks like a problem. You know, they've added some players. Ladd McConkey was an important draft pick for them. They've added a couple of other guys as well. DJ Chark coming in is an important addition. But that's a weakness. The only sort of solace is they're probably going to be running a much more run-heavy offense, and they're going to lean on their receivers less than they would have in the last few years under any of the previous offenses that Justin Herbert has been in. So, you know, I agree with you. I think from a personnel standpoint, they have gotten worse. But Harbaugh and Greg Roman, you know, they know how to create an offense that doesn't necessarily need to lean on the passing game and can be efficient and can still function. So I think that's what people are looking for. But I kind of feel like it might be a year away. This might be a rough opening season for them. And then next year is the year where we get to see the fruits of all the additions.
Sam Munson is our guest as we wrap it up. What do you see with the upside of Denver as we go through the AFC West here on a deep dive? Do you think Denver is closer to a rebuild, or similar to the Chargers, are getting better personnel and maybe they're another year or so out?
I think they're in the midst, if not just starting, a rebuild. You look at that roster, and I think they've got some major problems in several areas. And you know, we looked at this team a while ago, a couple of years ago, and we thought they were an Aaron Rodgers away from being a Super Bowl team. And obviously they never ended up getting Rodgers. They got Russell Wilson instead. And that's just been a complete catastrophe for this roster. They shipped off Jerry Jeudy without ever really discovering if he could be a high-impact player because the quarterback situation was bad. Cortland Sutton has never really bounced back to being the player he looked like he was going to be before injury. And Patrick is coming back from an injury. It's just not a good receiving core. The offensive line had big investment last offseason and wasn't spectacular last year, even if Russell Wilson wasn't helping matters. You know, the running back room, Javonte Williams needs to play at a higher level, or Andre Destemay coming in as a rookie and make an impact there. And then you've got the question mark at quarterback with presumably Bo Nix going to be given every chance to start. And then the defense is not in great shape either. So I feel like Denver has really just started a rebuild and is plugging probably a rookie quarterback in to try and look a lot better immediately.
Sam Munson, as we say goodbye here in a moment, Sam, is there any weakness in Kansas City? Not weakness, but maybe a step back to give everybody hope out here from Vegas to the AFC West that maybe Kansas City can't three-peat? Because I think the motivation to three-peat will be the biggest motivation they ever have to be considered the greatest team of all time in an era that had Tom Brady. The 72 Dolphins were back in the day. They're playing for everything legacy-wise. Do you think they get there, or could they slip up?
I mean, I think they certainly start off the season as favorites again. There's not many weaknesses on this roster. It's one of the better rosters that Patrick Mahomes has had to work with since he's been in the NFL. The one concern, I think, is offensive tackle, where you know they don't have left tackle. Donovan Smith isn't there anymore. They've got a rookie in Kingsley Suamataia coming in, or Wanya Morris, who's been there already. Neither one of those guys is a sure thing at left tackle. And then the big expenditure last year on Juwan Taylor at right tackle, he didn't play well last season. I think he got in his head with the early kind of overemphasis of penalizing him with those false starts and illegal formation calls. He never seemed to recover from that. So if those two tackles are both a problem, that it's still a solid interior. It's still a very strong interior, but that gives them, you know, a bookend pair of problems that haven't been there since at least that Tampa Bay Super Bowl where things unraveled so spectacularly on the offensive line.
Last one, do you have a team that you think is overhyped and a team that you think is underhyped that deserve more credit?
I think for the underhyped team, I think the Atlanta Falcons are going to be a good team. Like that became a playoff team the second they signed Kirk Cousins. And we're kind of losing sight of that because of all the Michael Penix drama around the draft. But that's going to be a good offense, and they could make some noise in the NFC. Overhyped teams, maybe not overhyped, but I think the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals, I'm not sure either of them got better this offseason. I think they're both going to maybe struggle to live with a team like Kansas City, who does look like they're going to be in a strong position to three-peat.
Thank you, Sam. Good to talk to you. Always appreciate your insight. Thank you.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Sam Munson, very good. So I thought he was fair to the Raiders. It's a good segment on the AFC West. He's fantastic. So they basically said that the Chargers are a year away. He respects what the Chargers are doing. Said the reason why the Chargers are getting the hype is for obvious reasons. They have Jim Harbaugh, right? Isn't it my job to tell you all the people that in media are just giving Jim Harbaugh credit and he hasn't coached a game and for us to pump the brakes a bit on this topic? I don't know anybody else doing that other than me. I'm doing that. I'm telling you every day that they're overvaluing Harbaugh initially compared to their roster. He thinks there's an issue at quarterback with the Raiders, and there's only so much upside with those quarterbacks. I agree. That's why Aiden O'Connell has to prove that he's not an average quarterback. He's going to have to quickly prove. Same boat that Derek Carr was in. You know, Derek Carr was taken in the second round early, and Aiden O'Connell was taken in the fourth round. Derek had to prove that he could play and start, and he did, and he was a quarterback here for 9 years. Aiden's got this year to prove that he's a starter and can be this quarterback starter here for years to come. And we know that Gardner Minshew can play. And he thinks that Denver is in the midst of the early portions of a rebuild, which means that the Raiders can't afford to lose at all to Denver as they're in a rebuild. John Ireland, voice of the Lakers. How about that? Coming off the J.J. Redick press conference, I go back a long way with John Ireland. Thrilled to have him here on the flagship here. John, let me jump in. J.J. Redick dropping a bit of profanity at the news conference. What did you and the rest of the media think about that up close?
We kind of loved it. JT, I'm like you. I've probably seen 1,000 of those things over the years, and I can't ever remember in an introductory press conference for any sport anybody throwing out the F word once, let alone twice. But JJ is uniquely himself. And one of the questions I asked him was, I said, you know, you played for Coach K, you get into the NBA, you play for Stan Van Gundy, you play for Doc Rivers, you're playing for all these, you know, name coaches. Who's the voice in your head? And he said, the voice in the head is mine. I'm going to be me. I'm not going to be apologetic about it. And I'm going to talk like I talk. I'm going to say what I say. And, you know, the funny thing about that, JT, was it happened about 20, 25 minutes into the presser. I mean, it was all like pretty straight laced and normal. And then he zapped us with two F-bombs, but everybody kind of laughed. It was a good change of pace.
John, interesting month or so since Danny Hurley declined and everybody knew J.J. Redick was on the short list before that. And then obviously he gets the job. What was it like for you and your listeners on ESPN LA, you know, trying to navigate through all of this, knowing that Danny Hurley became the shiny object that the Laker fans were looking at and then J.J. Redick gets the job?
I think most Laker fans, not all of them. I mean, you know, you've spent time in this market. You know, we got 16 million people here, and so they're not a monolith. There's a lot of difference between the fan base for every coach. But the one thing that was pretty consistent was that they needed to try something different. They've tried a lot of retreads, guys who had been head coaches before, guys like Mike Brown, Mike D'Antoni. They tried the hot assistant, you know, like the top assistant everybody wanted, guys like, you know, Luke Walton and Darvin Ham. You know, Frank Vogel was hired after they tried to hire Ty Lue and he turned it down. And then Frank went out and won a title in his first year. So they had tried pretty much everything else. And Rob Pelinka talked about the fact that they were going to try something new and different. And whether that turned out to be Dan Hurley or J.J. Redick. I think Laker fans just didn't want a retread. That was the whole thing we kept hearing on my talk show and, you know, just around the city. And they certainly have not done that. You know, nobody knows yet whether or not J.J. Redick can coach, but it's different. He's coming at this with a lot of different ideas. He's a really smart guy, JT. I don't know if you've ever talked to him, but you can tell he's one of these guys that spends a ton of time in front of a computer, in front of video, and breaking stuff down. And anybody who listened to the, you know, the podcast he did with LeBron know that, you know, this guy gets into the weeds and gets into it deep. So if it works, it's going to be a stroke of genius. And if it doesn't work, as I've told you before, everything with the Lakers is either a super high or a disastrous low. Very rarely is there anything in between. So we're just hoping it's a good one and not a bad one.
John Ireland's our guest. I think he's polarizing in a good way. You know, I thought others deserved it, just like we've been in radio for, you know, I'm going on 30 years. You've been doing this a long time. Some people deserve jobs because they grinded it out for 15, and others come right in and cut the line and get a big show because they're a former celebrity or player and they're able to do that. And that's the way, John, life works. Some people are going to cut the line. Other people are going to get an opportunity first. I look at him and I wonder if you look at Sam Cassell or other guys who were number two or three on a bench for 10 or 15 years and paid their dues a little bit more, maybe they deserve the opportunity to become the Lakers head coach. But I'm okay with this because I think he's an authoritative figure, a polarizing guy. He proved himself. LeBron's comfortable with him. Jeannie's comfortable with him. And I think he's going to get out in front of this story with the LA fans and try to tell everybody what his plan and vision is going forward. What do you think his plan's going to be to maybe get help from Rob Pelinka to get more players off the bench and have more depth?
I think what they're going to do is they're going to knock down these things in order. The first thing he's got to do is build a staff. And that's a point of contention, JT. When any of these guys get a job, they want to know, can I hire my own assistants? And what has happened with the Lakers a couple of times, it happened with Luke, and it happened again with Darvin, is that the Lakers have said, sure, go ahead and hire your own staff. And then these guys go out and hire all their friends or you know, guys that they can trust, that they've worked with before, not necessarily anybody who's done it before. I think what Rob and JJ are going to do is similar to what they did with Vogel. When they hired Vogel, they said, we want to try something. We want to bring in a bunch of guys, kind of a council of super friends, guys who have been head coaches before. So on Frank's staff, they immediately went out and they hired Jason Kidd and they hired Lionel Hollins, guys who had been head coaches before. I think that's what you're going to see with JJ's staff. I think they're going to put in a call to Scott Brooks. I think they're going to talk to Nate McMillan. I think they're going to maybe call Stan Van Gundy, who JJ played for twice, and try and get him guys on that bench, at least one, who have been through what he's about to do before, so he's not flying blind. And then they'll hire some of these young guys, these young up-and-coming guys, these guys like Joe Mazzulla, who the Celtics hired out of the G League, and he turned into a great coach. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a mixture. I think that's the first thing. The second thing they're going to do is I think they're going to try and build some depth so he can go 8 or 9 deep. Last year, we were probably 7 or 8 deep. I think they'd like to stretch that out to 8, 9, maybe 10 deep. And that's just going to be a matter of what they can afford, what they can fit in under the salary cap. But I think that's job one and job two. Job one is get a staff that's experienced, and job two is maybe get them enough guys where you can go 9, 10 deep. Because let's face it, JP, we're one of the most top-heavy rosters in the league. Most of our money goes to LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Sure.
We don't know if D'Angelo Russell's coming back. We think Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura are coming back, but it'll be a matter of who will take their money and what fit.
John Ireland's our guest. I said that also. I think the ability for LeBron and Anthony Davis to recruit, and you've seen this for years being the voice of the Lakers. If you're looking at a player and you're saying you get to play with LeBron and Anthony Davis, we can't fit you in at $22 million a year, but we can get you in at 12 or 13. John, you've been doing this a while. Do people want to take a discount to go to L.A. where taxes are high. It's expensive to live there. But, hey, you're going to get a chance to play with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. How easy should that recruiting process be?
It's a great question, and it's funny you bring it up today. I was talking to my brother. I do the games with Michael Thompson, Clay's dad, and you know who won two titles with the Lakers. And I was talking to Michael today about a bunch of stuff, and I said, hey, hypothetically, if Clay and the Warriors break up, and I know that's probably come up on your show, it's appearing like that's certainly a possibility, not for sure, but they could break up. Clay has a chance to be an unrestricted free agent if they don't re-sign him. I said, and the, let's say the Lakers can only pay Clay $14, $15 million, which would be, you know, somewhere around the mid-level, which they would be able to afford. Clay's a guy that's made $40 million. Would Clay even consider that? And Michael said, yeah, he would. I think because it's the Lakers, it's because it's the team he grew up, you know, watching. Kobe was his guy. I think that he absolutely would consider that. And there is kind of an aura around the Lakers where guys would consider, you know, the JT, you know, back when you and I were living in LA, remember that one year they talked Gary Payton and Karl Malone into taking the minimum. And, you know, those guys didn't need to do that. They could have made, you know, 19 or 20 million back then, and they came in for three. So it's happened before. Is it a lock that guys would do that? No. But would I be shocked if a guy like Klay Thompson took a pay cut to come play with the Lakers and try and win with LeBron and AD? No. I mean, I've seen it happen before. So it takes a unique guy. It takes somebody that wants to play with LeBron, wants to play with AD, and is willing to take less money, but it wouldn't be unprecedented. So, yeah, I think there's a chance.
The voice of the Lakers, John Ireland, real kind with his time with the J.J. Redick news. Just one more quick thing before I ask you about travel. I wanted to get your opinion overall when you see this team, and it's just a special team. The Laker fans are global. The Laker fans are everywhere. But this Bronny story is getting good. Because you don't have to draft him, but you got to draft him because he might go drafted at the end of the second round just for trade bait to talk to LeBron or, you know the depths of this question, John. What do you see playing out here with Bronny James? I'm pulling for this kid. He had a medical issue on the court. You know, you grew up under a spotlight. He's a good player. I watched him play AAU out here in Vegas when he was 12, and he's just a special kid. What could happen here over the next couple of months with Bronny James?
Here's what I think is going to happen. The draft is on Wednesday and Thursday. The Lakers have the 17th and the 55th pick. Mm-hmm. I think if Bronny's still on the board at 55, they take him as a project.
Yes.
And JT, I'm shocked at how many people in our business, in the media, are just killing this kid before he's ever had a chance to do anything. And here's why. Go through any draft, just as an exercise, you or any of your listeners. Go through any draft and look at the 60 players in a draft from any year. Half of them don't make it, literally 50%. By the way, even in the first round, they don't make it. And so most of the players you're taking, you got a coin flip chance that they'll ever make it in the NBA. And in the second round, it's really a reach. Guys taking 40th, 50th, 60th. Occasionally, one of them will make it, but the overwhelming majority of them don't. So if the Lakers have a chance to throw a bone to LeBron at the end of his career with the 55th pick, I would argue, JT, and I say this as an employee of the Lakers, the chance that the 55th pick makes it is very slim. So why not take a flyer on Bronny? I don't get what the big uproar is. You know, people say, oh, it's nepotism. Welcome to the real world.
Yeah.
You know, there's
where you been, right?
In every business. And here's the truth. With nepotism comes opportunities, but then you got to cash them in. You know, Joe Buck was given a job early in his career because his dad was Jack Buck. But then he went out and killed it. There's a guy named Noah Eagle who's been the Clippers broadcaster for the past 3 years. He just left last season to take a job at NBC. Noah got a right out of Syracuse as an NBA announcer. He got that opportunity because Ian, his dad's a great announcer. But then Noah went out and killed it. And now he's got a chance to have a better career than his dad. So is Bronny going to get an opportunity because his name is Bronny James? Probably. But it's going to be up to him whether or not he kills it. But I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for the Lakers to take him. I hope we get an opportunity. Like you said, he had a medical scare that looked like he might not be able to play basketball. He's worked his way through that. I think it's a great story. I'm rooting for it. I don't know if it'll happen. But I think what I'm guessing is that nobody takes him before 55. We have the 55th pick. We take him, we bring him in, and we see what happens. And I think that'll be fun to follow.
Last one. I know you love your job. Do you still pinch yourself when you get on the team charter? You guys are a rock star group when you land in a city. The bus gets to the hotel. There are fans outside all time. It's at night, in the morning, when you're walking around a city. How great is it to be a part of the Lakers and travel with this rock show?
Every year, JT, at the beginning of the year, Bill McDonald, our TV and I, TV guy and I, look at each other, and we made a promise when we both got we're both hired in the same year in 2011, so we've both been doing this now for 12 or 13 years, and it's the definition of a dream job. We both grew up as Laker fans. We never take it for granted. I think that I know other guys feel this way, but I think I have the best job in the world. I love it. It's a great opportunity. We have a ton of fun doing it. I love that I get to do it with Michael, who's a lot of fun and who's a great guy. And to answer your question, yes, I pinch myself every year, several times a year, and I will never take it for granted. If I get to do it for another 20 years, great. If I get a call tomorrow that they're going in a different direction, I'll say thank you for the time I got to do it. I appreciate you asking me that question, and I hope other people get the opportunity that I've had to get their dream job and to be on a run like I've had. It's been pretty unbelievable. And I never take it for granted and appreciate it a ton.
Well, inside knowledge, that's a Mandy's Award performance right there, John. I'll leave it on that. Great to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of the summer. I'll be out there with the Raiders in Costa Mesa for training camp. I hope we can get together and say hello.
I would love it, JT. Continued success to you, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you, John. John Ireland, nice conversation with the voice of the Lakers. How about that? And I agree with what he said. I agree with my life. When you have a run with something for a long, long period of time, whenever it ends, you embrace it. If it lasts longer, you love it. And he's been the voice of the Lakers for a while. And he's got a championship ring, and there's more to come. Now the head coach is J.J. Redick. Still going to talk more about him, what went down yesterday with the Stanley Cup. 702-365-9200 if you want to get in. Good day today. It's hot. It's the end of June. Heading to July. We're used to it out here. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Left. 2-1 Panthers. A dream 30 years in the making is a real. The Florida Panthers have won the Stanley Cup.
Lord Stanley is coming home. You always will have a place in South Florida.
JT, welcome back as we're brought to you by Tequila Commissario. You might not be a tequila drinker. You might be. This is the Ferrari of tequilas. The Reserve is amazing. The Blanco will mix with anything. The Agave, you'll love it. Tequila Commissario, proud partner of the show. So as I mentioned, when I woke up this morning, I knew this would be an interesting day. Last night I was at the Wynn, Las Vegas, the beautiful Wynn, hosting my Mad Dog show, and the hockey game was on, and the College World Series. It was over. I got home in time to watch the end of the Stanley Cup Final, which truly was an amazing game. I just want to mention a couple of things because we are a hockey town now, like it or not. You know, I get frustrated with this hockey town from time to time. I feel like I disappeared on this channel when I did a ton of hockey on the other channels here. And we got San Jose Shark fans who listen to this show in the Bay Area, LA King fans, fans from all over the country, all over the world, love hockey. When I watched the game last night, in that third period, it was fascinating sports because Connor McDavid, who's the best hockey player in the world, ended up winning the Conn Smythe Trophy for the MVP. of the playoffs, and rightfully so. He's clearly the best player in the world, but I'm not a believer in winning the MVP if you lose. I'm just not. I think if you lose, you could be the most valuable player on your team that loss, but you can't be the most valuable player of the tournament unless it's truly exceptional. And Connor McDavid was truly exceptional in a handful of games. Throughout the entire postseason, his point total was right there behind Gretzky and Lemieux. So that was fascinating. But remember, they were down 0-3. And in the games that they went down 0-3, Connor McDavid couldn't get anything going. Edmonton couldn't get anything going. It was all the Florida Panthers, and then they stormed back. So you got to take into account that in the games that they went down 0-3, Connor McDavid wasn't an impactful player. He was the best player in the ice, but he wasn't impactful. So as the game was wrapping up last night, he was on the ice for way too long. And I was watching with my son, and I got a buddy of mine visiting in town, and I said, he's not coming off the ice. This is ridiculous that Connor McDavid is staying in the game this long. I mean, it's not the right thing to do, but he wanted to stay on the ice with Draisaitl to try to do something special and just to get a goal. But normally guys on the bench in the third or fourth line that have fresh legs and have been on the bench are going to come off the bench and have an explosive edge. Connor McDavid is different. So he wanted to stay on the ice, and he ended up winning the Conn Smythe Award. And as they lose the game 2-1 to end that miraculously amazing comeback after trailing 3-0, I was more impressed with McDavid in defeat than I would have been in a victory. If they would have won 4-2 or 5-1, it would have been impressive. McDavid would have been known as the captain of the greatest comeback in hockey history, and especially to do it in a Game 7 on the road. But I just love the warrior aspect of him playing and adding on to all those minutes. So when the commissioner, Gary Bettman, came out and announced that McDavid won the Conn Smythe winner, I wasn't in shock, but I was a little bit surprised. The Panther fans booed the selection. McDavid had left to go to the dressing room and did not emerge to accept the award. And at that point, I said to myself, wait a second, is he going to come out of the dressing room, the locker room, and get his award and skate back in? And I also thought it was a classy move for McDavid not to grab the Conn Smythe Award, because it would have took away from the celebration of the Florida Panthers and their fan. They won the cup. The cup's coming out on the ice. McDavid knew that if he went out there, he would have got booed. A lot of fans would have given him an ovation there because he's such a great player. But in hindsight, I think it was the right move. He earned the Conn Smythe thanks to one of the most dominant runs by an individual player in playoff history. 42 points of the fourth most in a single postseason in NHL history, behind only Wayne Gretzky, who had 47 in 1985 and 43 in 1988. Mario Lemieux had 44 in 1991. They both won the Conn Smythe in those seasons, but winning the cup. His 11 points in the Stanley Cup final were 2 points shy of tying the Stanley Cup finals record by who else? Wayne Gretzky, who had 13 in 1988. So he was fantastic, but he didn't win. And winning an award when you don't win the cup, it's hard to do. So Draisaitl, one of the best players in the world, was asked about McDavid winning the MVP and the losing effort. I thought this was very interesting. Quote, I don't think he cares, Draisaitl said. I mean, it speaks to how amazing of a hockey player he is. There's no player in the world that wants to win a Stanley Cup more than him. He's done everything right every single day just to win it one day. It's really hard with him being sad and being disappointed at the end. So you could tell the entire locker room was frustrated and hurt after the game. Now, I'm fascinated to see what happens here because, you know, Vegas has never been a hockey town. Now it is because we won the Stanley Cup here. And if Vegas hadn't won the Stanley Cup by now, and Vegas wasn't making the playoffs, which expansion teams normally don't make, it's just been incredible what's happened here in Vegas. Year one, Vegas goes to the Stanley Cup final, loses to Alex Ovechkin and Washington, and then they win the cup in year six. But I was thinking last night, where would we be with the Golden Knights if Vegas had made the playoffs? In 6 years, we have a cup appearance and a cup title and playoff berths except for 1 year. Let's just say for argument's sake that Vegas in 6 years missed the playoffs 5 times. Would the upper deck be filled to T-Mobile? Would people still be showing up to T-Mobile to see the on-ice, you know, Cirque du Soleil performance before the game? I don't know the answer to that. Because last night at Florida, who plays in Sunrise, Florida, outside Fort Lauderdale, if the Florida Panthers would have lost and collapsed, up 3-0 and losing 4 in a row, I don't know if that hockey city would survive. I mean, they got a tremendous training center and a headquarters and all that. But I just wonder how many of those transplanted fans would have said, I'm going to come back after losing back-to-back Stanley Cups. They lost to us in Vegas, and they got beat in a dominant way. I mean, Vegas killed them. And then they almost choked us away. I would bet that if Florida lost last night and it was a 2-1 victory, I'm not saying the team would have won out of business, but look at the Arizona Coyotes out of business and moving to Utah here. I don't know if Florida would have had the legs to put up with this long term. I could be wrong on this, but don't tell me that Sunrise, Florida is a great hockey town. There's a lot of transplant hockey fans there who are Sabre fans. Obviously, Boston Bruin fans, New York Ranger and Islander fans. I just wonder, if they didn't win that game last night, where would they be? Also, the College World Series, the first number one seed. How about this Tennessee team winning? They were the SEC champions. They won the SEC tournament, and they won the national championship. And they were the one seed to go through the gauntlet the first time since 1999. So as that was happening in progress, I was watching that game going, man, does anybody even know about this? You got the Stanley Cup final on. You got the College World Series going down at the same time. And then I turned on the Olympic trials, and I saw that Randall Cunningham's daughter in the high jump almost missed the Olympics. She came in third and found her way to come in via the back door to get to Paris, which is unbelievable because she's such a great athlete, an incredible athlete. So yesterday was a pretty good sports day, and J.J. Redick, as we talked about earlier, had his press conference and dropped the two F-bombs, which I thought was riveting television and something you don't see. So as I opened up the show over an hour ago, I talked about now we're in the dead zone of sports, something that I embrace. I like this time of year. I'm going to mix in a light vacation or two, a couple days off, long weekends, whatever my wife and I figure out. But what I will tell you is now, with hockey ending, the NBA Finals ending, the College World Series ending, it's going to be lean here until NFL training camps open. There's going to be Aaron Rodgers news along the way. There's going to be someone around the league who does something stupid and gets arrested. There's going to be a Justin Timberlake DUI moment. Hopefully not many of them, but this is what happens this time of year, where people are waiting around, they're on vacation, they're feeling themselves out, and normally there is a storyline that gets us through this. Terrell Owens doing sit-ups in the driveway, Barry Sanders retiring from the Detroit Lions unexpectedly before camp. There's always something. The Caitlin Clark story was so massive for all of the last 2 months. I think that's kind of winding down a bit. Some of her performances and games coming up will be big in certain cities. I expect that to be. But overall, we are now all in this together. And we're going to kick it off with our top 10 Raider games of all time, starting here in less than 2 weeks, which I'm really excited about. One other storyline that was on the cover of ESPN today, ex-Raiders defensive end Chandler Jones pleaded no contest and may avoid jail time. He pleaded no contest on June 17th to a domestic violence charge, will avoid jail time if he meets certain conditions, according to Clark County, Nevada court documents. He received the suspended 90-day jail sentence. The charge will be dismissed if he stays out of trouble for the next 6 months. We hope he can, and has no contact with the victim except for family court orders. You know, Chandler Jones is only 34 years old, everybody. He was arrested in Vegas in September and charged with a misdemeanor for violating a domestic violence temporary protective order. He was arrested again in October for violating that protective order again. These are very serious charges for the one-time writer. He was charged with two misdemeanors in September, but one of those charges was dismissed when he made his plea. According to the records, the Raiders obviously released Chandler after his arrest in September. At the time, it was the second of the season. And if you look at that, you know, he was in the second season of a three-year, $51 million contract. Before he was released, Jones had been away from the Raiders since Labor Day weekend when he made a series of social media posts aimed at our team owner Mark Davis and then general manager at the time, Zabe Ziegler. the coach at the time, Josh McDaniels, the Raiders had placed Jones on the non-football injury list on September 20th. As I'm reading this from ESPN, Jones, who had been selected to four Pro Bowls, also received two first-team All-Pro nods, didn't play in the NFL last season after he was arrested. He's had 112 sacks over 11 seasons. Look, I thought that Chandler had an opportunity to potentially to be a Hall of Famer. He was on pace with that sack number. Remember, we had Greg Townsend on last week. He has 107 and a half sacks, more than Howie Long. And I thought that Chandler, having more sacks than Greg Townsend, if he played for the Raiders for 2 to 3 years, got a combined 15, 16 sacks, he'd be one step closer to the Hall of Fame. But I think all of these transgressions will probably keep him out of it. And he was one hell of a player. So when it comes to his mental health, the mental health of Darren Waller going forward after his divorce, these are hard topics for players who recently played for us in Vegas for the Las Vegas Raiders. So I hope everything works out well with Chandler Jones, because he was going through a really difficult time last year. It was a very private matter in the building. No one really talked about it, and I think people showed a lot of respect to Chandler and his family, what he was going through, which a lot of it had to do with mental wellness, which wasn't going right at the time. So read the story today, because it's a light day in NFL news, and this was the NFL story that was on top of ESPN.com, and I hope that Chandler Jones has a good support staff around him here, because clearly he's going through very difficult times, and hopefully he'll get the help he needs as he moves on from his football life. Not saying that he can ever play again or what's going to happen here, but I would doubt that overall. 702-365-9200. NBA draft coming up on Thursday. We have a one-hour show. We're going to pick up the draft here live. Everybody's excited about the Sphere and the NHL and what they're about to do, which is really exciting. And I'm excited as we put our schedule together to head on out to Costa Mesa. I'll be there about 2 weeks total of the 2.5 weeks that we'll be out there for training camp before the trip to Minnesota to take on the Vikings and then the Cowboys and the 49ers at home. I'm excited about what should be a really impressive preseason game, as we're going to see hopefully extended time or a little bit of time for these NFL players who play for the Raiders to get some really good work in, as they're going to need to get the work in to be at their best to open up against the Harbaugh brothers. If you want to get in before we get out of here, before the hot top of the hour come in, Vinny's in for Q again. We got all our great partners that we want to thank along the way, including Remy Martin, Team Up for Excellence. When you head into any of the casino properties here on the corridor, if you're looking for the cognac, the premier cognac, it's Remy Martin. And also Cointreau in all of your unbelievable tequila experiences. Have some Cointreau with Tequila Commissario, a great match of two of our premier partners right here as we continue on Raider Nation Radio.
We want to respect and honor LeBron's ability on June 29th to make a decision about his contract. He has a player option, as we all know. So definitely we'll give him that time to go through that decision.
J.J. Redick and Rob Pelinka are just going to sit back and wait for LeBron to make his decision on what he wants to do. England and Slovenia just tied at 0-0 in a soccer game I watched for 90 minutes. So both teams advance. England wanted a tie, they advance. Slovenia wanted a tie, they advance. And no one tried to score. That's not good for the sport. No. That is not good for a sport that millions of people tuned in for to see that. But this European Championship and the Copa, and the Copa's coming to Allegiant Stadium, is big time. Thanks to our guests today. They were good. Really appreciate Sam Munson. I hope you enjoyed that. John Ireland, the voice of the Lakers, and Sam Munson. Sam Munson, John Ireland, and Jeff Sherman, who joined us over at the Westgate. We're trying, man. We're just trying to pound through here, give you what we got. We thought the interviews were really good today. And Vinny Bonsignore will jump in and join us here coming up tomorrow. We got a couple other guests, Levi Edwards, other ones that I'm trying to line up here as we count down to training camp. And we try to figure out what the game plan is going to be going into that. And we're going to find out when we get there. I believe July 21st, rookies report. July 23rd, veterans report. And then the Raiders will hit the ground running. I think it's going to be pretty much all business, man. Going to be pretty this time off here. Bobby, you were talking about trauma and doom in the past. For years we've had in June, and we don't have a June topic. For years in June, we've had some problems around here. We had the hiring of Josh McDaniels, the firing Josh McDaniels, the fans not liking him, Jimmy Garoppolo's foot injury, Tyree Wilson's foot injury after he was drafted. There was a lot of, as you said, trauma and drama. As you pointed out, none of that knocking wood now. So that means as we look at this team going forward, want everything to be peaceful for the next couple of weeks. There's a lot of other people that want me to talk about other shenanigan topics, personal topics around the Raiders. We will not do that. We will just sit here and focus on football. And then there's going to be some fun. I know with the whatever fans are able to attend, the LA fans and who's going to be out there, it'll be pretty cool to see what the Raiders do in another state, a state that they dominate. They dominate Southern California. And I think it's going to be fun because I know how the Raiders run their business and they run it well, especially overseas, within the states, internationally. And they'll do it well in Costa Mesa. Vinny is waiting right there with Ari. They're coming in next. And they got a big show lined up for you. I think Vinny's got a little Mount Rushmore I saw on a tease. So one of the groups put that out. Was it Upshaw, Stabler, Tim Brown, and Marcus Allen? I'm a Freddie B guy. Any list you got to have Fred Biletnikoff for me. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. I'm excited. The Aviators are in town. Hot. Modelo. Have a Modelo with me. An ice-cold Modelo, proud partner of our show. Thanks, Bobby. Vinny's on deck. Find everything you need at Raiders.com.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.